The rabbis teach that we're supposed to look at Yetzias Mitzrayim, the leaving of Egypt, the Exodus, as if it's happening right now. And there's some really great thoughts about that. We've talked about it on the podcast, but how practical is that, really? We got an amazing guest who's going to unpack all that for us. Check it out.
Welcome to Consciously, a podcast focused on honest conversations for regular people seeking spiritual growth. Here's our host, Menachem Poznanski.
Hey, Consciously family, welcome back. This is the first time I'm doing something. I'm really excited to be here. We have an awesome guest here, Rabbi Shlomo Buxbaum. And this is the first time I'm doing like a live podcast interview without set questions. And recording the whole thing straight without doing an introduction.
I'm happy to be the first.
So,
I'm always
congratulations.
Happy to be
I'm really excited. Anyway, I want to welcome you to the Consciously Podcast. Thank you for joining us. If you're new, I want to encourage you to subscribe and give us 5 stars and a review on anywhere that you like to take your podcast. Check us out on social media, The Light Revealed, on Instagram and on Facebook. You can also check out our website, thelightrevealed.org. And you can reach out on Instagram also, Menachem Puz. You can also email us at thelightrevealed@tlrfamily.org. Check out our books, most especially the newest book called Acceptance, which just came out this week.
Mazel tov.
The Holy Land. And thank you. And Please God will be out in stores here in the U.S. Right after Pesach. There's a pre-order link that I'll post in the episode description. Okay. enough commercials. Okay, so I'm really excited. I have my friend, Rabbi Shlomo Buxbaum. We became friends. We never met each other, but we became friends by interviewing
and reading each other's
podcast,
books and which picking is super each other's fun. Brains. More me picking your brain, but
right. No, it's great. It's really, really wonderful. And Rabbi Shlomo put out a beautiful.
I like it. Nice, also, Rabbi my Shlomo, website nice is rabbishlomo.com, okay. So I feel like I'm like Rabbi Shlomo Kalbach, you know? Like, how did no one else grab this
right,
domain?
It's good. It's a good vibe.
For me, I don't know.
It gives you a sense of Rabbi Shlomo's energy over here, which is awesome. So anyway, he just put out an amazing book that I had the privilege of reading a few months ago and just giving some feedback on, which I didn't have a lot of feedback to give except that it's awesome and I love it and it's fantastic. And I'm really looking forward to rereading it over Pesach. And if you want to check out Rabbi Buxbaum's previous work, so the current work, I just confuse people, current work is called Four Elements of Inner Freedom. And the past
An
book
empowered
was called
life.
Four Elements of
yes.
An Empowered Life, which was also fantastic, really, really amazing. Shlomo does some really awesome stuff. He has a great podcast. He has amazing guests on. Sometimes
Ed, was that you won, on having also, you on Menachem was
very, very
one
nice.
Of my I think that I probably quote our episode that we did together the most. There was so much wisdom in that. Absolutely. I'm always like,
really?
My friend Menachem Poznanski says
wow.
This all the time.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you. That's very kind. It's fun. And then also if you want to check out some of his get to know him a little bit, there's a previous episode on Consciously with
yes.
Rabbi Buxbaum.
It is my
so
pleasure.
Thank you for joining us, Rabbi Shlomo Buxbaum. Thank you for being here. Oh, and you can find the book, Four Elements of Inner Freedom, The Four Elements of Inner Freedom,
yeah.
On the Mosaica website
exactly.
And also on your own website.
Org, RabbiShlomo.com and Mosaica, and wherever you buy your books, that's where it is.
Okay, awesome. So a lot of great things. It's really, really encouraging. Okay, so the one of the reasons that your book is exciting to me, and also that I really want to talk about it today is because it has a lot to do with Pesach. It has a lot to do with the Chag of Pesach that's coming up, the Chag HaGeula. And also it really touches on addictions and recovery, and that's really where I think where you and I spent a lot of time having conversations. I was really impressed. You kind of really wanted to get good feedback to make sure that you were kind of grounded in terms of like talking about recovery and talking about addictions, which I really admire. I don't know why you do, you know, whatever. It was nice. It was meaningful to have an opportunity to talk to you. So just give us a little bit, if you don't mind, of an introduction of, I guess, some of your background, who you are, what you do. Not so much background,
because
we actually went into some of your background in the last episode, so you don't have to go into the background. You can if you want to, but also primarily what you do now. And then also just a little bit of a synopsis of the book, and then I'd love to, after that, unpack like what the four elements are, how, and then how that correlates to Pesach, and then perhaps Fabring about recovery and addiction and all that stuff.
I'm here in Silver Spring, Maryland. And we have an organization here called the Lev Experience. And, you know, it is, I guess, primarily a Kiruv organization. But, you know, we do our best to really get all segments of the community involved. We have from people and not from people coming together and learning together and all sorts of great things. And we did some young professional Kiruv in the D.C. area. But really, over the course of COVID, we shifted our focus slightly to try to expand our network. And when I say ours, you know, my wife and I, we work together. And I wrote the first book during that time, The Four Elements of an Empowered Life. Started already working on the second one almost the day after I submitted the manuscript. And it's a whole very interesting story how that came about. And then we started the podcast and social media and things like that. And once we were doing it during COVID and we saw that the, you know, there is a wider audience that's interested in what we do, so we kept at it. And I would say that I dance between these two things now, about sort of our local operation on the ground over here and seeing what I can do to you know, make a positive impact in our community, but also to spread out and see if I could share a little bit and maybe, you know, give people, there's so much content, there's so much great stuff out there, but you know what, listen, I'll also throw my, what do they, throw my hat in the mix or something on deck, whatever the term is. So that's what I do. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and the new book is the second in the series of The Four Elements. And it's really trying to take an idea that I think is a growing idea out in the world. I mean, it's an ancient idea, and it's always sort of been, it's been a discussion in, you know, in Eastern religion, and we have it in Kabbalah. The Baal HaTanya talks about it. It's all over. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, the Sfas-Emes, speaks about it. More recently, I don't know if you remember, there was a book that came out, Bilvavi Mishkan Evne, by Itamar. It's like a household, you love it. So he came out with
It's amazing. You don't know my obsession with that.
Okay, all right. No, I didn't know. We'll talk about that, but it makes sense. So, Bilvavi, he wrote a lot about the four elements, but there wasn't a lot that was just, you know, in circulation. And to me, I saw it as just a beautiful opportunity to really to build on it and to share with people what the four elements means and how to use it as a journey inward to really understand ourselves, a psychological model of self to map out our inner world, but also to see that it's actually a central theme in the Torah. The Vilna Gaon speaks about that also. Once you understand, once you see the four elements, you actually see it developing from Bereishis Bara Elokim, from the second that Hashem begins the process of the Bria, and then it's there, it's present in the early generations and all the flaws of the early generations. The Avos, Nemos, the patriarchs and the matriarchs come along and they're mitaking that, and then ultimately that is the thread with the Jewish people. And that was the first book.
And that was your first book. The first book really touched on those, how those four elements manifest.
In Sefer Bereishis, yeah.
In Sefer Bereishis, what are those called? Like, there's a word. Anyway, through those personalities and how it expresses that.
Yes. And then the story of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim and leaving Mitzrayim and the Arba Kosos, the four cups of wine and the four terms of redemption and the four stages of Geula, it all revolves around the same thing. So when you see this whole picture, you realize that actually the entire book, beginning with Bereishis Bara Elokim until the end of Parshas Pekudei, it's one long story. And that is the story of the four elements. It's the story of our inner world. It's the story of us and the things that we are going through. And I believe very strongly that in our generation, that's the way we need to be learning Torah. I believe it, as if, you know, my sense from also our gedolim and the great leaders and the teachers that inspire us is that the Torah has to be something that really speaks to us. Every single pasuk of the Torah needs to speak to us and awaken us and be speaking to our own personal journey, which is a journey of struggle. And that was the impetus.
Okay, so this is what I'm gathering from you. So you have this enthusiasm about this construct of the four elements, right? Which I want to break them down in a minute for the listeners who are not necessarily familiar. Obviously, I really encourage you to take a look at the book. You kind of really break them down really, really well, and kind of lay them out. But before we get into that, but what I'm understanding from what you said was, you know, there are these kind of core elements of reality. These four elements, and these four elements are not only present within the construct of history, and they're not only present within the dialogue of the way what Hashem is communicating to us from Bereishis all the way through Shmos, the creation of the Jewish people, but it's also the makeup of our very souls. So as we explore and look at the four elements, and this is, I think, the premise that what you're saying, the premise of you know the two books that you wrote, part one and part two, is as we explore those archetypal figures and the stories that surround them in Bereishis, and the way in which the Avos and the personalities in Bereishis represent the fall of the four elements, and then the rectification of the four elements, and then how those four elements play out in the story of the development of the Jewish people through Geula from Mitzrayim, and then specifically how that expresses itself through the practices that we engage on Pesach at the Seder. You talked about the four cups. There's four questions
in Mishkana. Right.
There's a lot of four going on for Lashon of Geula. Right, there's a lot of fours going on. So what you're really revealing is that there's the value of kind of exploring the four elements. Right, this is your thesis, is that it really gives a person a framework through which not only to understand how the Torah is, or at least this aspect of Torah, the narrative of the creation of the Jewish people and their redemption from Egypt and then receiving the Torah, how that is founded upon these four elements, but then how that also, you talked about, gives us a map of our inner world, which then can help us, I guess, develop ourselves or feel more comfortable with ourselves. Okay, so let's just, for a moment, if you can give us a little sense of what the four elements are for someone who's kind of uninitiated. What does that mean, even four elements? You talked about how they're rooted sometimes in literature that's Eastern literature and other forms of literature, but obviously they're rooted in the Torah. You quoted the Vilna Gaon, you quoted the Baal HaTanya, you quoted more recently the Bavavi Mishkan Evna, or Itamar Schwartz, who's a contemporary tzaddik.
So what are the four elements? To really begin, I don't know if to say to begin at the beginning, but where we see it discussed in the clearest way, the way that it's really built up, is from Reb Chaim Vital. It's in Shari Kedusha. Shari Kedusha presents the four elements as four struggles. And that's what the Baal HaTanya is quoting that, and that's probably what Rabbi Nachman is referencing as well. So he really puts the spotlight on the negative expressions of the four elements. And he says that the earth element is, he says, all of our midos, all of our character traits are connected to the four elements. And then he goes and he says the flaw of each one. And again, the just to take it one step back, he says the same way that all of matter is made up of the four elements, which is what the ancient world believed, everything is either fire, water, wind, or earth. And I think probably from a more modern scientific perspective, what they were probably, it was their way of saying that everything is either a solid or a liquid or a gas or just pure plasma, pure energy. But the ancients called it fire, wind, water, and earth. And Reb Chaim Vital says, the same way that all of matter is broken down into those four elements, so too our inner world, which reflects that, like we see in many of the Svarim, the Malbim speaks about this in Parshas Truma, where he says that the physical world that we live in is the Olam Gadol, and our inner world is the Olam Katan, the small world. And everything is reflected in each other, right? Our inner world is a microcosm of the greater world. So therefore, if all of matter is broken into these four elements, so then our inner world is also broken into that. And Reb Chaim Vital says that it's the earth element that is connected mainly to the flaws of sadness and laziness. He puts those two together. Perhaps if there's one word that could connect both of those things, we can say that it's being sluggish. You know, because laziness just really sounds like a teen who just wants to watch TV all day, but it's something much deeper than that. It's a sluggishness. It's a feeling of heaviness. And we'll get back to that in a moment. The water element, he says, is where pleasure is rooted in, and therefore the negative flaw of that is lust, indulgence, well, misguided lust, let's say. Indulgence in the physical. That's the way he describes the water element. He says the wind element is mainly what he calls diburim betelim, idle chatter. Right. So he says included in that is, you know, speaking about, you know, leitzana, silly things, sheker, falsehood. I don't remember some of the other examples, but things that are related to speech. And then he says the fire element is gaiva, is ego. And after seeing this and looking, you know, and trying to apply it to the Torah and seeing it in other contexts, what the angle that I took was to really expand it a little bit more and to explain that really I believe what Reb Chaim Vital was touching on was that we have these four parts of our own inner world, and that are also kind of like the four elements going from the heaviest to the lightest, and that is just our physical consciousness, you know, our understanding that we are physical beings that are on this planet for a very, you know, specific time. If you think about like Maslow's triangle, hierarchy of needs. So you think about like the lowest in the triangle, where it's just like the most basic need is to know that you could make it through, that you're 120 years on this world. And that awareness, that consciousness, that we are physical beings having this physical experience in this world, that is the earth element. That's the earth part of us. Our understanding of ourselves as a body, as a physical being. And then you move up to water, which would be the emotional realm. And the fact that, okay, once you get past the fact that you're just a body walking on this world, you just need to make it through, you need to pay your bills and make sure that you have what to eat. No, you're also an emotional being. And you're looking for love and you're looking for connection. And you don't just want bread and water. You want sushi and steak and pizza and good wine, right? We want to experience this world as a world of connection, of connectivity. And then he moves up to the wind element, which he says is idle chatter, but really that's connected because our communication, our expression is connected to the realm of our intellect. So the wind element is our intellectual realm. And ultimately the fire realm, which he says is gaiva. What is gaiva? It's the desire, the ego, the desire to know that I am someone, I matter, and I'm doing something in this world, and people look up to me, and I'm respectable. And that's the realm of the will. Will or motivation, which is really where self-esteem comes from. You know, you could say that it's, you know, the doing self, the feeling self, the thinking self, and just the being self, like how I perceive myself. So looking at the four elements through that lens really opened up a whole nother world to try to understand all of the stories sort of based around that model.
Okay, so if we're touching specifically on Pesach, right, so just as you've broken this down, you have these earth, water, wind, and fire, and you talked about something interesting, which is, you know, oftentimes we associate in the worlds of recovery, there's a language like defects of character, which means like our flaws, right? And the way in which the elements are expressed, at least the way that you described it through in Reb Chaim Vital, was specifically related to those areas of character that reflect a way in which we are engaging the world without our ideals, right? Not disconnected from our ideals, right? So you talked about sluggishness being related to the earth and indulgence related to water and falsehood related to wind and ego related to fire. But then you talked about another aspect of the four elements, which is really powerful, which relates more to our consciousness, right? And we have different layers of consciousness. You talked about the consciousness of our physical self, of our continuity, and then the consciousness of our emotions, and then our consciousness of our intellect, and then our consciousness of our, like, our ego or ourselves. I don't mean ego in a negative way, but our sense of self, our sense of importance, our sense of missionhood, our sense of ideal. So, and how that kind of corresponds to the same flow of earth and water and wind and fire. So very powerful. So it really gives me, just kind of sitting here as a listener, like a frame, like, oh, okay, so when he talks about an inner map, right, in terms of who I am, you're like, yeah, you're starting to describe me and the way in which I engage the world and my different parts, right, and the way in which those parts can express themselves in a manner that's maybe uglier, and then maybe the way in which they can be expressed in a manner that's more positive, which I think you touch on in the book, because we talked about some of the less attractive versions of those traits and how they manifest. But then there's also, on the other end, more adaptive, right? Would be like, I guess, the psychological term, right? Uses of those traits, right? And ways in which we can utilize those traits in the interests of our own benefit and the interest of the benefit of the people around us and the interest of finding meaning and purpose in our lives. So in this book, you really touched on how that correlates to the exile in Egypt, and then also the exodus from Egypt, and really how in the Seder, right, we're really trying to connect with all that and to redeem those parts of ourselves and to really allow those to emerge. So can you touch a little bit on how that correlates? Because I'm sure we could spend probably hours just for bringing on the elements themselves. I could see you really have it at your fingertips, which is really remarkable. And it's really cool to see somebody who's like an expert.
They got enough of them there yet. It's very, very cool.
But how does that...
It's interesting. Every time, I want to tell you something
about it. I don't
every time, because I've been doing a lot of speaking and, Shabbatones and things like that around it. And every single time I sit down and I think about the whole thing, like from the beginning, like chazering it over and like really and coming up with a new, because there's so much there and it's so rich and it's like, working through it again and again and again. And it's wonderful. Anyway, I'm sorry, I cut you off the question.
It's such an interesting thing. No, I appreciate the comment. Like when you're, because I'm finding that also in my life, like there are things that, as I'm moving forward in my life, I'm able to articulate them. And it's kind of like, I kind of meant that the whole time, but I didn't really know that. I knew it, but I didn't know it. I had a sense that that was true, but it wasn't. But there was a clear like fluidity to how you were describing it, which really kind of expresses, like I said, an expertise. Okay, so how does this kind of now correlate to
Mitzrayim?
Mitzrayim, to the Seder. To like we're going to sit at the Seder, we're going to do all sorts of odd things. We know that they're odd because the Haggadah tells us that they're odd, right? They're supposed to be odd on purpose, right? So what are some of the ways the book is broken down?
The book has two sections. The first section, part one, is called slavery. Part two is called freedom. The way that the book is structured is to show how the four elements were an aspect of Mitzrayim. And then the second part is to show that the four terms of redemption, v'hotzeisi, v'hitzalti, v'ga'alti, v'lakachti, how they correspond to four stages that the Jewish people had to go through from when they left Mitzrayim until they stood at Mount Sinai, at Har Sinai. And during those four stages, they were working on one of those four elements that correspond to a struggle that they had back in Egypt. The book doesn't go in the order of the Seder. I haven't yet worked it through that the Seder follows that order. There's so much about the Seder and the order that it does go through, but I haven't worked it out in that. And also, the book wasn't necessarily meant to be a Pesach book. It was more meant to be just a story about, the Exodus itself. But it certainly is represented in the four cups. But the way the book more focuses on seeing it in Mitzrayim and seeing it in the Geula. So I guess I'll talk about it first in Mitzrayim, and then I'll pause and if you have anything to comment on that. But it's a big mistake to limit the story of Mitzrayim to physical slavery. The image that we have of the Jew with the beard, and he's pushing this big major brick, and there's an Egyptian that's standing there in his underwear, whipping the Jew. Like that image is fine on a pshat level. But when we're going through it and we're trying to apply it to our life, like Mitzrayim is our life. I mean, that's all of the idea from the Baal Shem Tov that now everybody knows it, that Mitzrayim is from the term of Meitzar, of being constricted in a constricted place. Like, that's our world. That is our life. Our neshama comes down from Eretz Yisrael. It comes down from the Olam HaNeshamos, the world of the souls, and it comes down into this body in this world, and that is Mitzrayim. And we are on a journey to Har Sinai, on a journey to Eretz Yisrael. We're on that journey, and that is our Olam Haba. So the whole thing is a remiss to our life. And on a very basic level, physical slavery is the earth element because, as we said before, the earth element is the aspect of our consciousness that is connected to our mortality. And our mortality makes us feel that the day-to-day is slavery. Most people, there are people that love their jobs, but you know, however much you love your job, the reality is that day-to-day is a grind. And I haven't met anyone that will say otherwise. And we do get down, and we do feel jealousy, and we do feel heaviness. And that is a real, real part of life. And, you know, this fictitious dream that, you know, that is sort of, you know, promoted on social media that, like, you know, love your job so much you'll never work a day in your life. You know, like, you can't beat the system. You cannot beat the system. Life is going to have its struggles. It's going to have its challenges. And there are going to be days that you're just going to look around at the world and you're just going to feel like the world is defeating you. And that is the earth element part of you that is being touched upon. And therefore, the aspect of physical slavery in Mitzrayim was the aspect of earth element. And when we're not feeling vitality in our life, when we're just feeling like this whole journey on to be a human being on planet Earth is just a drain. That is one aspect of slavery. That is the earth element in slavery. Okay, then we move on to the water element in slavery. We see that there's a lot of focus on water in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is a watery place. It receives from the Nile, and Pharaoh wants all the boys to be thrown into the Nile and to be drowned. So we see that water is a big part of it. And because, as Reb Chaim Vital says, the water is the part of us that is indulgent, is lustful. And we know that Egypt, Mitzrayim, was a place of immorality. Every single time we're being introduced to Mitzrayim in the Torah, Sarah goes down to Mitzrayim and Pharaoh wants to rape her. And Yosef goes down to Mitzrayim and he has his Potiphar's wife is trying to seduce him. And then Pharaoh wants to throw all the boys into the river so he can just get with the Jewish girls. And like, I mean, it's the whole theme. And then emerging from that, the Gemara says that it's in the merit of the women that the Jewish people get let out. Why? Because the women see what's going on and they say, you know what, we have to, you know, step up our game. Excuse me, I hope that doesn't sound, you know, inappropriate on your podcast. But they're like, you know what, if we're going to keep the men engaged, if we're going to keep the holiness, we're going to have to show that there's beauty in romance, there's beauty in intimacy. And the Gemara says they make themselves beautiful and they come to their husbands in the field and they seduce them and then they go between the boundaries from one field to another, if they find a little private place, and that's where the Jewish people are conceived in this moment of holy romance, of holy intimacy that's happening in Egypt. So that's the water element, and that's what's going on in the water element in Egypt. Then we move on.
Sure. So 1 second. So that's the op. So just to clarify, so you're saying that there's the aspect of water within slavery, which is the restriction of holy intimacy and the introduction of a kind of like violent and almost like traumatizing intimacy that you see, like where Paro is kidnapping Sarah and Potiphara is trying to seduce Yosef. So that the slavery there is the
slavery is, again, it's meant for us to reflect and show that Mitzrayim, our Mitzrayim, is going to be a place that is going to try to seduce us into their definition of what romance, intimacy, sexual connection is supposed to look like. And the Jewish people thrive in Mitzrayim because they're able to stay true to a much more beautiful picture of that. That's the idea behind the water element in slavery. And I mean, it's a major theme. I never even realized this before until it was pointed out, but like, you know, when they were about to leave Mitzrayim, it's just like a quick digression, you know, they had to, of all the places that they had to tie the sheep was to their beds, which is very interesting. I just never thought about this. Like, you know, imagine you're sitting there trying to go to sleep at night and you literally have a sheep that's tied to the end of your bed. And you're just like, you know, are we counting sheep tonight? And the sheep is just like, Like, that's offensive, you know, to us sheep over here, you know, come on. But, like, to their beds, literally, because the bed was a major theme. The bed was a major theme. The frogs, it says, the Medrash says that the Tzfardea, when they came out of the Nile River, what did they attack? They attacked specifically the sexual organs of the Egyptians, because it was a punishment for the fact that they tried to bring the Jewish people down in that area. So there is a lot of focus on that, which the book goes into much more detail. So that is the water element. Okay, so then now we move on to the wind element, and like we said before, Chaim Vital says that the wind element is about silly speech, idle speech, and false speech, sheker, which we connected to the realm of the intellect. So now again, we get back to Mitzrayim, and we find that Mitzrayim in the Zohar and in Kabbalah is called Golos Hadibor, an exile of speech. What does that mean that it's an exile of speech? And in fact, Paro, the name Paro, can also be shaped into Pera, evil speech. And Paro's whole attitude of mocking Hashem, who is God that I should believe in him, and, you know, speaking down about it. But also the idea that one of Paro's main goals was to disrupt the Jewish people from having any meaningful conversation I saw from Rav Schwab, where he says that specifically the reason why Paro wanted to spread the Jewish people out, it says in the end of Shemos, Paro said, what can we do to get them to spread out? So Paro withheld the bricks. They shouldn't have bricks. Why? So all of their mental capacity, what are they going to be thinking about? How do I get bricks and where to go? And they're going to be spread out. They can't stay together because they need to spread out on the land. So they lose community. They lose the ability to speak. They lose the ability to think. So that whole aspect of communication, of speaking in Torah, of prayer, all of that also gets thrown out the window. And that is the idea of Mitzrayim being Golos Hadibor. So that is the wind element in exile. And finally, the fire element in exile, because fire is this idea of gaiva, of ego, and the idea of trying to define ourselves, not from what we are. Remember that the fire element is the being self. And when you don't feel a good, healthy self-esteem, when you don't know who you are, so now you try to define yourself by your stuff. And we know that Mitzrayim was an extremely, they were into their materialism. Paro himself is the example where it says in Navi that he says, this is my Nile and I created the Nile. He views himself as an embodiment of a god. You know, Paro is the quintessential narcissist in that sense. And the Mitzrayim themselves, they're into their wealth. So much so that, you know, you find that the Jewish people, many of them died during Makas Choshech because they didn't want to leave, because they liked the very fancy way of life that Egypt represented. So the fire element in slavery is the fact that Egyptian was this place of abundance and very much of material connection. So that's where you see all of the four elements represented as being exiled in Egypt.
Mm. Wow. Okay, so just if you're, because you correlated some of it to like our modern day kind of work experience and how we experience our careers and maybe our drive to be as humans. So you touched on it a couple times, but you'll let me know if I'm understand this correctly. So the way in which like our lives can feel like slavery is, first of all, from the element of earth, our lives can feel like a chore. Now there's an aspect to life there, like I have to get up in the morning and I don't want to get up. I have to push myself as discipline, right? So there is a chore aspect to life, but when my life feels like a chore, right? So that's a form of slavery. The water element corresponded to like a seduction of falsehood. Right, like the idea of connection and expression and indulging my passions is a beautiful thing that has a lot of energy and it drives a lot of progress, but that can become corrupted, you know, if it gets ahead of itself or if it's done in a manner that's abusive or selfish, right? So that's where it becomes corrupted, and then suddenly the seduction goes from being a positive thing, the passion goes from being a positive thing that's focused on building, that's like building the Jewish people like you talked about, and becomes something more empty. So that's another form of slavery. Another form of slavery you talked about was like the wind, which has to do with like mocking God or mocking heritage or mocking law or mocking ideals, but really what you really touched on very powerfully that I connected with was the way in which we can become so frantic with what we're being called to. That's what I was kind of like absorbing as you were talking. We can become so frantic, like so busy with all the circumstances of our lives and all the different ways in which we're being called. It can really strip us of the opportunity to set intention and to be thoughtful and to be consciously aware, which relates to our intellect, to think about what we're doing and to think about why we're doing it, right? And therefore, you know, we can be pulled away by the abundance of our lives, right? By the abundance of our passion and the abundance of our responsibilities can pull us away from like really having an intention-based life, right? So now we're enslaved by our lives because it's how busy we are, so to speak. And then the last one is the fire, which really relates to ego, which is the way in which we define ourselves by things, maybe the way in which we define ourselves by our successes. By the way I would think about it was the manner in which the symbols of our success become false idols, either money or a house or a car or a nice suit or whatever it is that those symbols of our value that we start to worship, and then we lose like the inherent self-esteem that's present in just like doing a good thing or having a meaningful job, like having a successful opportunity to be an actualized human being. So to me, you were really describing so many ways in which we can become slaves to our own reality, which are represented
Exactly. And I think, again, all of these things now, if you want to look at like our life, you know, we're here in the Western society. What are the things that we're struggling with? I mean, you know, like you say in the opening of acceptance of your new book, you mentioned this also, just the numbers of like, here we are, our generation, we're struggling so much with you know, people are not happy and depression is up and people are anxious. Anxious is such a terrible, terrible machla symptom of our generation. And that's the earth element. And obviously, you know, when it gets to the water element, we have the fact that people are becoming less and less connected deeply. And instead, we're trying to drown ourselves in, you know, different types of indulgences, depending on, you know, who the person is, where they go for their escape, where they go to exercise that muscle, that vacuum, that thirst for pleasure. And instead of getting it in the meaningful, fulfilling way, they do it in ways that just create a bigger vacuum. And then, you know, wind and falsehood, it's the busyness of our lives, but it's also the fact that there is so much falsehood out there. You know, we live in the era of false news, right? That's the term that became such a buzzword. And it's hard to know what's true. We also have a tremendous ability to access ideas, tons of ideas. It's all at our fingertips, you know, especially now, artificial intelligence, literally all of knowledge is at our fingertips. And now we have the responsibility to sort through it in the right way. And that's the wind element. That's the intellect. And then the fire element is the fact that we live in a very, very wealthy generation. We have abundance like we never have before. And therefore now we're enslaved by the fact that we need to keep up with the Joneses, keep up with the Schwartzes, whatever it is, right? You know, we have to keep up with that. And all of these things, I mean, when you see all of this and you look at the Haggadah and you see this whole idea of the fact that the Jewish people were comfortable in Mitzrayim, they were comfortable there, it's not a 3,000-year-old story. It's literally our modern-day story. You could read the story of Egypt, you could read the Haggadah through this lens, and it could be speaking about all of us. It could be speaking about our story.
Very, very powerful. Very, very powerful. Okay, so the next section of your book kind of steps away from the problem, which is really nice. It's really good to kind of define the problem. That's always a good thing. You don't want to stay stuck in the problem. So as we transition into the solution, you talk about the four Lashonos of Geula and how those correspond to the Arba Kosos. Obviously, it's very much related to all the fours of the Seder, not without getting lost in kind of the details of that. But if you could just perhaps talk a little bit about, what is the solution? And, you know, for each of those things, what does that look like?
So again, so we see references in every step. Also, the book goes through the very briefly the 10 Makos and shows how the elements were woven into the Makos. We won't go into that now, but that's very interesting. And already we see that the Mefarshim, the Abravanel, and the Sforno, I believe, also all of them, they see the four elements through the 10 Makos. You know, that's a whole nother thing. But then we have these sort of four stages of Geula. And if we think about like the first stage, which is just really coming to its crescendo at the night that the Jewish people leave Mitzrayim. So if you think about the opposite of the earth element used properly, or the way to overcome the struggle of the earth element, it is through the trait of Zrizut, the trait of trying to enter into life with vitality, with excitement, to wake up every single day and push away the earth element by saying, like, I want to move, I want to get up, I want to be active, I want to feel the vitality of life, I want to infuse myself with joy, even if I don't necessarily feel it naturally, but I can be in control of that. You know, a smile lights up a room and movement, and if I walk and I'm not slouched and I have good posture and I'm moving with alacrity, then like the Maseilas Yesharim says, when he's speaking about Zrizus, when he's speaking about alacrity, he says, Chitzonios me'oris apnimios, the externals will arouse the internal. And then here we have the night that the Jewish people leave Mitzrayim. And Hashem says, leave, Hashem orchestrates it that they should leave b'chipazon, leave in a rush, leave with alacrity, leave with speed. The whole idea of matzah, right? Matzah is the anti-earth element. Why? Because the chametz is sluggishness. Chametz sits and it gets fat and it gets puffy. And matzah is, you got to keep it moving. Matzah is frantic. You know, I know we're limited in time, but one of the reasons why I hope that your listeners will check out the book is because there's such a beautiful connection. This night of Mitzrayim, if you think about, it's not the first time we're introduced to this night of Mitzrayim, is not when the Jewish people leave. We've had it two times before. The first time we ever see this night of the Seder was, the very first time in the Torah, is when Cain kills Hevel. It says, right, the Medrash said, well, I think it's Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, I don't remember, it's in the book. It says that that night, what sacrifice were Cain and Abel bringing that night? What sacrifice were they bringing? Pirkei Rabbi Elazar says that they were bringing a Korban Pesach. Adam tells his sons, this is going to be a big night for all of history, bring a sacrifice. And that's when Cain and Hevel brought each one. And it's specifically on that night that Cain, who is the Oved Adama, right? He is the worker of the earth. Cain is the archetype of the negative flaw of the earth element. He gets down on himself. And Hashem says, Lama chara lach v'lama naflu panecha. Why are you getting so sad? Why are you getting so depressed? This is the earth element. Get out of it, snap out of it. And obviously he doesn't. And therefore Cain becomes now the archetype of the defect of the earth element. The second time that we have in the Torah, the night of the Seder night, is when the angels come to visit Avraham. That is the time when we speak about Avraham's chesed. Where do we really see Avraham's kindness in the Torah? Where do we see Avraham's hospitality? We see it on this night of the 15th. And if you take a look at the psukim, what do you see? Mm. You see he's running. Exactly. He's running all over the place. Yeah. Why? Because Avram is the archetype of the elevation of the earth element. Avram is the only one in the Torah that says, Anochi Ofer Va'efer. Right? I am dust and ashes, which is a hidden remes to the fact that his whole goal is to elevate the earth element. So therefore, Avram is rushing, he's running, and he's the one who's all about Zrizus and enthusiasm. And then we have the night of the Seder when the Jewish people leave. And again, it's frantic. Why? Because it's reminding us that we need to go through life with this vitality, with this energy, to push ourselves to not be reactive to the earth element, but to take control of it and to go and to do and to move. So that is stage one of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's Vehotzesi. Okay? Should I continue or... should go into, okay, stage two.
Please.
So now we get, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so stage
okay.
two. We get to stage two, which now we find okay. the Jewish, you know, we would have loved to see Klal Yisrael leave Mitzrayim and then go straight to Har Sinai and march there. But first Hashem takes them in a little loop, you know, make a little U-turn. Where do they end up? They end up, they're sitting there, they're sort of parked by the Yam Suf, but they're also parked in front of an idol. What idol are they parked in front of? It's called Baal Tzifon. Where is it? At a place called Pi Hachiros. The Meshulach, the Ishbitzer says, he's building on the Rashi. Rashi describes it, that place of Pi Hachiros, as two mountains, two tall rocks, that were facing each other in the image of male and female. So sort of kind of this promiscuous image. And that was really a place that was like, you know, kind of the orgy center for the Egyptians. That if they wanted to go and have a major, you know, music festival, you know, where they'll really party and go all in, it was at Baal Tzephon. It was the idol of sexuality right there, right by the water. And the Ishbitzer explains that Hashem was testing the Jewish people to say, okay, you're free now. All right, bring out the DJ. Get the lights going. You know, this is your time. Party like it's 24. What year was that? I don't remember. Right, go crazy. You know, have fun. And the question was whether there was a test for Klal Yisrael to see whether they're going to use this opportunity of their freedom to suddenly party. And if they would have done that, then the Egyptians would have overtaken them. So the idea of them turning their backs on Piachiros and jumping into the Yamsuf was the elevation of the earth, of the water element, to show that they have moved past that. And really, where are they going to get their enjoyment from? Where are they going to fill themselves up emotionally? It's going to be by dancing together with God. And that's why they enter into the sea and they sing. And we have over here now a spotlight on Miriam and the women. Why? Because the women were so crucial to this place of you know, helping them navigate through the struggle of the water element. So of course the women need to be the ones that are rejoicing over there. But again, it shows this ecstasy that's happening now in the Yamsuf, in the water. And that's really where we get into this whole idea that the only thing that can really fill that vacuum inside of us, God gives us this beautiful gift of lust, but we're going to be all over. We're going to look for every single outlet, and that will suck us in and get us dependent and get us addicted to it, unless we can really, really immerse ourselves in a connection that really, really matters. And that's what's represented by the Jewish people crossing the Yamsuf, which that stage of the redemption happens in water. Okay, so that's sort of stage number two. And again, there's obviously references over here going back to the generation of the Mabul of the flood, but we'll leave that for now. Okay, so now we get to stage three. So now we're up to the wind element, Vigalti, the third stage of redemption. And there's many different parts of that. We have the Mun happens over there. We know that they see the Mun and they call out Munhu, and we know that that's the same letters as Emuna, which is faith, as they're developing sort of this understanding, a more robust understanding of what it means to be connected to Hashem. They get the first aspects of Torah study. They get, you know, sort of right after they cross the Yamsuf. But the main thing, the main part of this level of redemption is when they have to face Amalek. And as we know, Amalek is Gematria Safek, Amalek is doubt. But also on top of that, we know Rabbi Nachman speaks about this a lot. Rabbi Nachman speaks about Amalek isn't just, you know, like these desert hoodlums. Amalek are very sophisticated, Reishis Goyim Amalek. They're the most sophisticated of the nations. And Rabbi Nachman calls them the philosophers, the mechakrim, the scientists, the atheists. Not the atheists, you know, that just, you know, don't care about anything, but the atheists that are smart and they're wise and they're scientific and they make you feel dumb. Oh, you really believe that? You really believe that dogmatic Jewish stuff, you know? So Amalek, for us, it takes us on from an intellectual place. And Amalek challenges us. Amalek challenges our beliefs. Amalek makes us feel dumb and primitive for the fact that we're holding on to our religion. And they have to overcome this war with Amalek. Amalek is Asher Kor Chabaderech. They cool you down because they're the wind element. And overcoming Amalek and getting to Har Sinai is this idea of mastery of the wind element. And then finally, the last stage, they get to Har Sinai. And Har Sinai is on fire. The mountain is burning with fire because that's the fourth stage of redemption. That is the fire element. And when they're at Har Sinai, they have complete what's called in the Svarim, it's called bittul, complete ego nullification. The whole idea of parcha nishmasam, the whole idea of the fact that their souls came out of their bodies, is because that's complete bittul, nasa v'nishma Hashem, whatever you want, we're going to do. This is not about us. We're all connected over here. Vayichan sham Yisrael neged ahar ki ish echad, like one man with one heart. We're all connected. We're all here for your sake. It's complete elevation over the ego. So that is the mastery of the fire element, and hence Har Sinai is burning with fire. So we have all of those four stages. Every stage of redemption corresponds to another one of those elements.
Wow. Awesome. Fantastic. Just to give a little bit, because we're short on time, but I know your time's limited, but some really meaningful things that you said that I wanted to just highlight. First of all, this idea that the process of redemption from those things that kind of keep us anchored down, right? All the ways in which our positive activity can become enslaved by those kind of negative forces, right? So the most significant thing you said is that it's a stage, it's a process. It really reflects the fact that spiritual personal development is a process that a person's walking through, and you're kind of going shlava gav shlava. You're going level by level, kind of moving through, as opposed to like targeting one and then targeting another. Sometimes spiritual development, people will describe it. This is very reflected to like recovery work, which is, we had talked about this already, but this idea of defects of character and, you know, in the sixth and seventh step of this 12 steps, a big theme is as a person kind of emerges out of the destitution of addiction, they have to really like ask themselves, which corresponds to what you were talking about, I think, in Water, Wind, and Fire, which is like, do I want to like actually live a healthy life? Do I want to live a vibrant and full life, right? Which means not just avoiding the negativity of, let's say, the drinking pattern or the drug use, but really kind of really filling my life with spiritual elevation, which means starting to conquer and overcome and gain mastery and heal the different parts of ourselves, right? Which the language used there is kind of defects of character. And sometimes it can feel in processes of personal development like you're playing whack-a-mole with flaws, right? This one and this one, and you're kind of being hit from all sides. So one of the things that you said that was really powerful is that there is a process, and it's important to kind of realize that you're kind of moving through stages. But just to kind of touch on some of the things that you said that I think were really meaningful, just because we're short, because I think we could spend a lot of time on this. But one thing that you talked about was how the opposite of feeling like my life is a chore is infusing zrizus, infusing a vitality, keeping moving, leveraging that frenetic energy, not in a negative way where it's reflected in wind, but to really in a positive way. Get yourself moving, right? You talked about Masil Sasharm, right? Which is reflected more modernly, Lahavdil, in move a muscle, change the thought, kind of, right? Kind of shifting through. If I change my thinking, then I change my feelings, right? So if I start getting moving, even though it seems like I'm stuck, that's really going to be, that's this first stage of kind of trying to overcome a challenge. The next thing you talked about was piachirus, which is reflected in sexuality and intimacy and lust. But really what you talked about very powerfully was the way in which the Jewish people could have like thrown a party once they get out of Egypt, meaning they could have sold themselves short. And one of the things that I felt like you were reflecting there is the way in which in a process of change, we have to constantly let go of the successes and then move on to the next and go with song and dance, right? Which means with exuberance and with excitement into what's fresh and new, not just kind of rest on our laurels or get stuck in where we are or throw a party because we, you know, we had a few successful days, not to not feel good about that, but also to kind of throw ourselves into the ocean of what's next more and more and more, which is very powerful. And then you talked about wind and you touched on Amalek, which is really facing our own doubt and our own inner cynicism and our own kind of thoughts that say like, is this real? And what are you talking about? And just yesterday you did the wrong thing. So like, are you a hypocrite? Are you not a hypocrite? There's so many kind of amongst meeting literally people that are cynical and negative, right? Which occurs also, but like really facing our own inner cynic as we try to change our lives. And then you talked about that final piece, which is like, as we come to that place of some measure of success, of Har Sinai, right? We can really get lost in the fire of Har Sinai and not be mevatel ourselves, have bittel, which means to let go of what we think we know for a new and fresh experience and to have something totally new. It's obviously very related. One of the things I noticed very clearly, and you touch on this in the book very obviously, is that wind is connected to earth and water is connected to fire. Those elements kind of correspond to one another. But a really powerful expression of how I'm kind of practicing this constant process of pushing forward, reflecting back, feeling energy, moving on, not being tied down, not being encumbered we're anchored too much in what's wrong with me and kind of focusing on the new, the fresh, the bittel, right? It's not about me. It's about my missionhood. It's about my purposefulness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which ultimately then is going to lead me to the, what you said, Olam Haba, the promised land, or really heaven on earth, heaven within our lives, a sense of purposefulness and meaningfulness, which I think is what
correct,
is
correct,
what we're talking
exactly,
about.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why it says that at Har Sinai, they all got crowns. Because they really learn, like, this is really what it means to be you. This is really who you are. Understanding yourself internally, not by any sort of external thing. And that's also why when they were at Har Sinai, when they got tested with the golden calf, which Moshe later on is going to call that place Dizahav, which is Dizahav, too much gold. Because even still, even after Har Sinai, they couldn't fully shake that part. That seems to be the biggest challenge of the whole thing. But exactly like you said, that Har Sinai was really about finding their own sense of missionhood. And really, once we have that in our life, once we've reached that, once we really feel comfortable in our own skin, then we're strong enough to elevate, you know, the our whole inner world, all four elements.
Wow. Yes, okay, well, I want to thank you for joining us.
Thank you for
this
listening
really
to me ramble
fantastic.
On and on.
really. No, not at all. This is really wonderful. I really encourage everyone to go out and get the book. I think that one of the things that you really do that's really I'm very enamored by is that it's really, you know, and a lot of Sfarim do this, a lot of books do this, but you're really kind of drawing into how the messages within the narrative of the Torah highlighted by the messages of our tzaddikim are really like so present to our lives, not just like present in 2024. It's not just 2023, not just that. It's only 2023, right? I'm going to get too fast, right? Not just how it's like present within a world of, you know, America today, but also like present in terms of like what it's like as a human being to try to face the challenges of a reality, and particularly like as a young man or woman who's trying to like engage a career and like find that promised land of who they are meant to be, or who their mission is, who their purpose is, how the Torah is talking to you and it's speaking to you and it's giving you guidance and direction. And by unpacking it, it really opens the door to better understand yourself. And then through that, to really illuminate the practices that we're engaging in as we begin to reflect on Pesach, we reflect on Yetzias Mitzrayim, to see that this is not a story of the Jewish people in the past, and it's not even just a story of the Jewish people today. It's a story of the different parts.
Exactly. Thank you, Menachem, for the opportunity. I hope that your listeners are able to take something away from this conversation, and that if they go ahead and they buy the book, that they enjoy it, and that it's meaningful for them in their lives. They should always feel free. Everyone should feel free, if you're listening to this, to reach out to me directly. I'm an easy guy to find because I'm on all the socials.
You want to tell them how
my website is
rabbishlomo.com,
as you mentioned earlier, and then I'm on the social medias. My email address is myname@gmail.com. And I love hearing. Last time, after I was on your podcast last time, I had some of your listeners reach out, so I'm an easy guy to find. And it's, you know, it's important for me as a new author. I want to hear what people are, what they appreciate, what they're gaining from, because there's a lot more to say on the topic, and I'm really just waiting to hear what people have to say about it before I, you know, go jump back in for more. So thank you, Menachem, for all your help. You've been a great friend.
Okay. Amazing. Thank you so much.
Take care.
All the best.
Thank you for joining the Consciously family. Consciously is brought to you by The Light Revealed, a social media publisher bringing messages of Jewish spirituality and recovery to whoever is looking for them. Consciously is made possible by the kindness of the Capellius family in memory of Tzipora Bas Ravaram. If you've enjoyed this podcast, you can give us a review and subscribe wherever else you get your podcasts. We love connecting with you, so please check out our website, thelightrevealed.org. Feel free to email us at thelightrevealed@tlrfamily.org. Our producer is Morty Schwartz. Our social media content team is Zoe Poznanski and Tehilo Nassanian. The assistant to the regional co-host is Shmaya Honickman, and our music is by Eitan Katz featuring Zusha. Thank you for joining, and we wish you the most blessed day in only revealed ways.